I mean, this one can be longer, but then the other one had to be a bit, has to be a little bit shorter. The
Okay.
productivity iPad only stuff.
All right. That's good because I don't have that much of well, I don't have that much, so it depends on how much you have to add.
You always say that. Quite the contrary, when I'm paying with my Apple Watch, with Apple Pay, it brings me joy. So it shouldn't bring me joy. I'm spending money, but it does bring me joy. I'm sorry about that. Hello, I'm Michael.
I'm Radek.
And this is The Podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books to read and want to share with you.
As well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day, working our app, Nosby.
Or whatever else comes to mind.
And today we talk about finance. Because we're already, you know, dietary experts on the internet, and now we're going to be financial experts on the internet, right?
Yeah, like if you thought there wasn't a better way to make people cringe and just by seeing, you know, anything about diet, immediately assume that we're one of, you know, the countless charlatans on the internet that try to sell you fad diets. Why not talk about finance, which is the same as with fad diets. Like, everybody has something to say, and most of them do this because they have something to sell to you.
We're just trying to find topics which are not politics and religion, but are equally controversial.
that won't end well for us eventually.
Yeah. Okay. Why are we talking finance?
Yeah, so many times on the show, we mentioned the name of the friend of the show, Michał Szafrański, who's...
Yeah, hello, Michał.
Okay, so he's he's a popular Polish author and blogger, and he has the blog whose name is literally How to Save Money.
Exactly.
And he wrote a book called Financial Ninja, which is essentially a guide to personal finance. Now, the book is...
Yeah, sorry. The book is available only in Polish, unfortunately, so you can't get a copy in English yet. He might have plans to translate it, I don't know. But for now, so that's why you have to rely on our way of talking about it.
Yeah, so, you know, some of the content in the book is specifically for the Polish audience, but the vast majority of the content is universally true. And to me, that was interesting. Like, I didn't think the book is for me, like, you recommend it to me, but, you know, it's exactly the same as with, you know, fad diets. It's like, whatever, like, it's not that difficult, right? And if someone's, you know, has something more to say, is probably trying to sell me something.
Just like, you know, with diets again, it's easy. Don't eat as much. Don't eat so much calories. How hard can it be? And with the finances, the same. Don't spend so much money. How hard can it be? That's it, right?
Yeah, it's like eat less and move more. Well, yeah. Spend less and make more. I mean, it's...
Yeah, exactly.
What's difficult about that?
Exactly.
So to me, the book is interesting. Like, it's a really long book, and there's a ton of stuff that...
It's thick.
Was not particularly interesting to me because it was not particularly relevant to me. But, it was structured. There was a lot of stuff, like all of the aspects of personal finance you could be interested in. And there's a lot of insight and sort of general advice, just stuff that seems... Most of the stuff just seems obvious in retrospect, but I never considered, because I never thought about it that deeply. And some of this stuff is sort of systems, like good habits for finance that they don't teach you at school. And for most people, your parents didn't teach you that either because, well, they didn't know either. So there's a lot of interesting stuff there, right?
Yeah, so let's start from the very beginning. So how to lose weight? I mean, why lose weight? Or in financial terms, why save money?
All right, so I really like Michał's philosophy on this. Like, he had a podcast episode where he asked this question, like, why to save money? Because, like, he has a blog called How to Save Money, and people were asking him, okay, but why? Like, if you're struggling with money, then that's obvious, right? But I'm not struggling with money, right? I'm fine. So why would I read his stuff and sort of try to learn from it if I'm fine, if I don't have problems with finance? And especially, why would I actively go on the pursuit for saving money, right? And I really like how he explained that it's the point is not to do it for its own sake, right? I mean, unless you have to, right? But like, you make money to spend it, like, ultimately, sooner or later, maybe not immediately, but like, that's the point. We're working so that we have resources to spend on things we need and things we want, things that are nice. But the point of the pursuit of saving money is awareness, is so that you're aware about how and where you're spending money, because you save money on things you don't care about so that you can spend it on things you do. So it's really like it's optimization. It's not just in absolute terms that I will spend, you know, less money. It's about putting the resources that I have available to me, the things that actually I care about, which is going to be different than things you care about.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the minimalists have this saying, and like, let me get it right, is that when people are consuming too much, they're too much into consumerism, they are spending money on things that they don't need to satisfy or impress people they don't even like. Right. Yeah. So there's the whole thing. And as we talked on this show so much about optimizations, we optimize the heck out of things here on this show. We optimize, you know, our workflows, our packing, you know, so many things, and diets as well. So we optimize all that. And with the finances, as you said, it's the same thing. You have to optimize your finances because then you're aware of how much you really have, how much you really spent, what's really happening with the money. Because if you've been paying attention to us and regarding productivity or anything, going with the flow is usually the wrong idea.
Yeah, it is. By the way, I looked up the quote, and it's from Dave Ramsey, and it's, "We buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't like."
Exactly. Yeah, it's a beautiful quote. Yeah,
It's beautiful. So one of the things that Michał Szafrański recommends people do is to have a home budget. So to set aside, like, estimate how much money you have and need for different things and keep track of it. And at the end of every month, sort of see how much money you actually spend on every category and keep track of that, right? And that's a very useful tool if you're struggling with finance or you don't have as much margin. I don't do it because, and Michał Szafrański recommends that you don't need it if you make significantly more money than you spend and you don't have issues with finance. So I don't do that. But what I did that's sort of that's less involving, right? That's much less effort, but still insightful, is at the beginning of this year, I made the analysis of all of my spending from the whole last year, right? So I don't do it continuously. I do it like every year, or I did it this year, and I intend to do it at the beginning of next year. So in my bank's web app, you can categorize spending, and it mostly happens automatically. And I went through it, and I refined the categorization, and I dug through like other sort of sources of spending, like PayPal and whatever, and just made a and summed it up, right? The analysis, like a graph, a pie chart of how much money I saved, and then for the money I spent on what, and that's really interesting. That's worth doing, because you get a lot of insights from that by comparing different categories, right? So, for example, throughout last year, I spent a ton of money on travel, but I'm okay with that, right? Like the point isn't so that I spent less here, even though I could save a lot of money here, because that's something I do care about, and I want to explore and see new things and learn new things. So I'm okay with that, right? I can afford it, so why not? I also tend to spend, well, not last year, but in general, relatively a lot of money on technology, on electronics, which for a lot of people, when they would think about it, it would be like, okay, this is stupid. Like, I'm spending way more than it's worth, considering my finances. But for me, like, this is what I do. This is my life. I'm fine with that, right? But something interesting happened. There's this one category, which consists of like stuff like clothes and shoes and stuff like that, right? That kind of spending. And that was like 3.5%, which is like, okay, the number doesn't say much, but it's as much as I spent on traveling Europe last year, and more than I spent traveling Poland last year. And there was a lot of that. Like it seemed completely unreasonable, right? Like,
So you mean unreasonably high spending on clothing?
Yeah. Like I don't care about fashion. I don't dress nicely. I don't feel like, when I'm trying to think back, I don't feel like I bought really anything in particular last year, right? Uh-huh. So it seemed unreasonably high compared to other categories, like compared to how much I care or don't care about it. And so I dug deeper and realized that, because I couldn't, you know, 3.5%, that the relative number might not be that high, but the absolute number seemed unreasonably high. And so when I dug deeper into it, well, I realized that I made multiple stupid purchasing decisions that have to do with just bad habits, that I wasn't aware of it. Like, I didn't really think through how much I spend. And one of those bad habits is procrastinating, because like, that's exactly the point. I hate shopping. That's the worst. I hate it. And so I have the tendency to procrastinate on buying new stuff like clothes until the moment when I absolutely need it, right? So if the winter is approaching, or a travel is approaching when I really need some item of clothing that I don't have, then I will procrastinate until last moment, where until when I'm under such pressure that I will buy the first thing that fits and is acceptable and probably way overspent on it.
Ah, right. Okay.
And there was a couple of other things like that. So I don't know if it was a good example or not, but it was interesting comparing stuff I care about and stuff I don't care about, and that seemed just so sort of everyday normal stuff that shouldn't be a lot, and there was an imbalance there.
It was a good example, exactly as you said. You know, you haven't seen that coming, because you haven't, you know, if you wouldn't do the analysis, you wouldn't see that coming.
I would have no idea.
Exactly. So, and it's very important to highlight what you just said. It's okay to spend on something you care about, you know, as long as you're conscious about it. If it's a conscious decision. It was your conscious decision to travel last year, so you spend on travel. That's fine. And of course, over there, you can think about optimizations or, you know, traveling cheaper or whatever, but this is a different discussion. But as you said, if you see that you've been spending on clothes and shoes or whatever, these kind of things, and you don't care about them, and you thought you had enough anyway, like, it's kind of, you know, strange. And I totally can relate to that, because I've also seen sometimes in my life, like, these kind of patterns when I was like, how did I spend so much money on that?
Yeah.
If I actually didn't get anything, you know, I don't remember getting anything out of it, and then I spent so much money. Why and how?
Yeah. I have no idea how much an average person spends on shoes and clothing and stuff like that. So the 3.5%, like, it doesn't matter. Like, a better way of phrasing it is, I spent more on it than on traveling Europe. And I've been in a couple of different places, and I had so much fun there. Like, it brought so much joy to my life. And I'm thinking of clothes and shoes, and it's like, I didn't buy anything. Like, my life didn't change one bit. It just merely got back to the point where I was before stuff broke, right? And so it's like, it's really frustrating to see that and be aware of this inefficiency, right? Mm. But I wouldn't know if I didn't look deeper into it.
But wasn't also that true that you, it was still a transition from your old body to the new body, that you were still getting, you know, smaller clothing because, you know, you are smaller now? As well, an excuse, I'm saying.
Kind of. That mostly happened in 2016. I bet. I spent even more then because of it. But last year, I think pretty much all of my clothes were already the same. Maybe like rain jacket or something. But in general, no. So again, like, I have no idea how this happened.
You see?
Now I do, but it feels bizarre, right?
Yeah. Well, at least now you know why.
Yeah.
So I think also your example of clothing and things you care about shows that you have to also adjust, you know, what you're spending money on, depending on your, you know, position in life, your, mm-hmm. How old you are and how, you know, and also if you have family, if you have kids, if you're living alone or with the family or whatever. So especially I am very passionate about this part of, for example, people like you, that you are so young and you are still, you know, you just, you know, finished school, you have a job now, and you still don't have a family, you don't have kids, there are no diapers on your, you know, on your category of spending and things like that. So, or mortgage or things like that, right? Mm-hmm. So you're in this period of time. And then later, of course, if you're like in my period of time or, you know, before me, but like with small kids, you know, there are different priorities. So especially what I see young people doing wrong, I'm saying it's wrong. It's not, you know, it's my opinion, is the fact that, I know this, I've been there. When you're young, you are very, very fascinated with money. So if somebody has lots of money, you're like, wow, this guy has this. And I know this because whenever I pull up my iPhone X, the young people are like, yeah, you have iPhone X. And people my age, they have no clue and they're not even paying attention to it, right? So I know this, right? And I was like that as well. So you're fascinated with the cars, with, you know, with things. And especially if you're earning good money, like yourself, then you then people very often start, you know, compensating and spending more money. But, but I'm not going to talk about that. What I want to say is this. I realized that because of that, young people very quickly after school optimize their workplace for money. So I want to get a job that gives me the best bang for the buck, which usually is good. But if you're in the beginning of your career, I think it's not the way to go. I think when you're in the beginning of your career, what you should optimize for is personal development, what you can learn, you know, because you don't need much, you know, when you live with your mom and you know, you don't need much, right? You can actually not earn anything and still, you know, not die and still not be homeless. So what I'm saying is that when you are young, what you have is lots of time, but you don't have these, you know, mortgage, family, kids, you know, you don't have these kind of things. So you have lots of time. So you can exchange lots of time for, you know, for developing as quickly as possible. As rapidly as possible, yeah. And the mistake I've seen from many people was doing the opposite, thinking, you know, I want to earn lots of money right now because I finished school, I need it right now, I need more money now, and some people were even, you know, saying, you know, Michael, you know, I've optimized for that, and I look, my first salary is this, or my second salary is already that, like a trophy or something, and I remember, you know, back in my days, you know, I was a freelance, you know, guy, but for me the most important thing was not how much money I could earn from my freelance project, but if the projects were interesting and were developing me. You know, because I didn't need much money, so it was fine. My wife, when we even got married, she was doing internships, you know, and these kind of internships where she would hardly get paid, you know, but we could, you know, we could be fine, you know, we had enough money to just live by, but she was investing by doing internships at very high profile organizations. And thanks to this fact, later she got a fantastic job, right? So when you're young and you don't need much, you should optimize, you know, this is why I've seen an interview with Gary Vee, who was saying that, you know, that even now that he's so successful, he would still, you know, do an internship with Jeff Bezos for half a year, unpaid, you know?
Yeah.
I think anyone would do an internship with Jeff Bezos for half a year, you know, not paid, you know? I would pay him to have me as an intern. But that's the idea, that's the spirit. So when you're young, you don't need much, so you should exchange the time that you have, because you have lots of time. Yeah. To optimize, to develop yourself, to develop your skills. Because then it pays off when you're in your 30s, when you don't have that much time because you have, you know, a wife and a kid and a second kid or whatever. And then you start not having that much time. Then you optimize for money because you need the money for all these people. But so that's the thing. And I've seen many people, many young people, especially just being dazzled by being rich. And especially in our industry where, you know, programmers earn good money. So people are like, yeah, I need to get more money right now. I need to have a fancy car or whatever. No, you don't.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, you're sort of looking at this from a much different perspective, because like what you're describing are my peers, right? And I see a lot of that. Maybe not so much among my closer friends, like getting as fast as possible to a really, really high paying job, though I've seen that. But just people being, in my mind, unreasonably focused on getting their own place, their own apartment, their own car, because, you know, it's nice to have a car, and their friends, which are often much older than they, have a nice car. So I want a nice car too, right? And I don't get it, because stuff like that is really expensive. Like having a nice place and cars are take up a lot of money.
Oh yeah.
And you don't need them, right? Like it's like for me, you know me, I'm not much of a fan of cars in general, but it's different if when you're older and maybe you have kids, and so often you need to get from place to place with kids, and then, you know, having car is good, but then I have friends who are, you know, 22, 23, live in cities, have a job that is in cities, and they can easily and often do bike to work or use public transportation, which is often better than car because you can use the time actually and not waste it driving.
Yeah.
And yet they feel this urge that they cannot resist to get a car. And not just the cheapest possible car.
To get a nice car.
But a nice car. And and that's just stupid. And also, what you're saying about taking advantage of the fact that you have a lot of time and don't need money is exactly why I like traveling so much, because like I didn't always even like traveling that much. Like traveling is exhausting, right? Traveling is really overwhelming, but when you travel to new places, to new cities, to new countries, and experience very different environments and cultures, and spend time with people doing different things in different companies, in different industries, you learn a lot, and not just in a very direct way, as in like learning on the job, like specific skill, but sort of you grow as a person a little bit, right?
You broaden your horizon.
Yeah, you broaden your horizon in a very unpredictable way. Like you don't feel like you come back from a trip and you feel like, man, I've grown, but over a number of them, you feel like, you know, you see yourself then, and you think back to that and you see, man, I didn't know shit then. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's why I treat it like an investment, and like spending often a ridiculous amount of money on travel. Like going to the US is ridiculously expensive.
Yes.
But I'm okay with it. I accept that because it's I feel like it's an investment, and I don't really need that money right now anyway, right? And so also an interesting thing when looking back in my analysis of spending last year was seeing this trip to Panama, right? Mm-hmm. Which was fun, which was really, it's unforgettable, right? It's something I'll remember for the rest of my life. But the interesting thing was just how expensive it was. It was much more expensive than the ridiculously complicated trip to the US.
Wow.
And so I wonder like how willing I would be to repeat that. I mean, I would repeat that, but maybe not this year. Maybe not next year, because mm-hmm. like it was great, but really it was just for fun, and then you can question like, what was it worth it? I mean, I have no regrets. It was awesome. I would do it again, but like it's hard to say I've grown that much since it was really just for fun. It wasn't in a place, in an environment where I would ever be interested in. In living or working, yeah. Right? It was very different from traveling across Poland or Europe or to the US. It was very, even though it was travel, it was very different, and it was almost as expensive as a trip to the US and all of the trips across Poland combined, right?
Wow.
So, you know, you can weigh it and with this in mind, like seeing the actual comparison, you can decide like what's more worth it. Like where's the bigger leverage?
Yeah, how is the like how much of fun it justifies so much of spending, right?
Yeah, fun and also growing. Like I would spend less money on the trip to the US, which was just as fun, and I've learned a ton more, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, it's interesting insight. But on the other hand, as you said, these trips are kind of once in a lifetime trips.
Yeah.
So I remember my trip to Mexico back in 2003, and it was spontaneous because my friend was going, and I said, you know, let me go with you. And he said, yes. So we went, and I've never been to Mexico since. And but I'll go there, I'm sure. But this trip at that time, it was lots of money for me as well. It was a big commitment, but yeah, I still have memories from that. You know, after 15 years. So yeah. But again, I haven't repeated this kind of trip like in next year or something like that. No way.
Exactly. Anyway, speaking of saving money, like, and also an interesting consideration, which Michał Szafrański went into quite a lot of detail was. Is that you always also have to look at opportunity cost, right? Because mm-hmm. again, there's no point in just trying to save money for the sake of it, because it's not always like very efficient. Like there's always more interesting things to do in life, and also like just if in the pursuit of having more opportunities when you need money. Very often, striving to make more money is far easier and more efficient than working your butt off to save the last pennies, right? It's an interesting, like, the book was interesting also to understand the domain of like finance and saving money better, to see where the leverage points are, because there's a lot of stuff that's just not worth my time, where my time is sort of more worth than the saving I would mm-hmm. achieve if I put the effort, but there are some leverage points, there are some places where you can optimize to where you can make a big impact, where you can invest once and so like expand effort and time on it, like at the beginning after reading the book, and then it's your project for a while, and then it just is. So it's stuff like optimizing fixed costs, right?
Yeah.
Stuff you have to pay every month. So like one, that's why often I feel like it's really stupid to buy or lease a new car. Like it's just ridiculously expensive, and then like you lease it, and every month you have this ridiculously big number, right? And you know, saving money on fixed costs makes a big difference. It makes a big difference to when you when you save on sort of big one-time purchases, and when you by analyzing things, you change your habits. So you notice where that you tend to overspend in certain ways, and you decide once, okay, like a rule of thumb, like in this situation I will do this, and then that's all the effort you expended, and then you know better, and you stop wasting money over the long term. But then fussing over a large number of relatively small purchases is not very efficient. Like it's easier to expend effort learning the stuff or whatever, so that you make more money, and then it makes the same effect.
Yeah, for example, for our company, we have this this thing that, you know, Tomasz, our CTO, he's looking after our servers and our, you know, what we spend on infrastructure. And very often we are trying to think if we can save some money, you know, make something, you know, cheaper or better or whatever. And it's good to analyze this, but it's good not to overanalyze this again, because because again, I'm asking Tom, okay, Tom, we save that. That is one customer. So maybe how much time it will take you? Well, to save that, I would need, you know, 5 hours of work. In fact, I think 5 hours of work, we can get new customer, you know? So, or maybe even two. If we get two new customers for 5 hours of work, we've already, you know, outspent it. So it doesn't make sense to save that much money, because compared to the time that you need to invest in this to do it. So this is like on our company like level. But for example, I have this similar thing on my personal level. So there is this saying, I don't like this saying, but it works. You throw money at a problem, right? Mm-hmm. And usually throwing money at a problem is the opposite of spending, of saving money, right? Yeah. But it's good to have a threshold. So for example, you say, I don't know, $10. If something solves my problem for $10, I'm not going to try to solve it any other way, right? Yeah. And I'm not going to cry over to these $10, right? So, for example, you know, you need a cable for your iPhone, and because the one that you have, like, you know, it doesn't work anymore or whatever, and instead of, you know, trying to fix this cable or spend, you know, time, maybe it will work now or whatever, no, you buy a cable for $5 on Amazon, it solves your problem, done. You throw away the old cable. I don't have any more good examples right now, but the idea being, if $10 solves your problem, you solve it, you don't cry over it. It's you know, you're good with, you're okay with spending these $10 because they solved your problem. So I think it's a good way to have that, because this gives you this, you're not sweating over things anymore, because mm-hmm. you've already made it pre-decided, something we have already talked on the show. We've pre-decided that $10 is solving your problem. So if something costs $7-$8 and it solves your problem, you're not sweating over it. It's in your threshold. You don't worry about it. Because sometimes we are humans. So we're like, oh, this thing, he cheated me on $7, or he cheated me on $6 or something like that. No, it's within $10. Solve your problem. You don't have to worry about it. It's done. So, like, you know, it gives you this peace of mind.
Yeah, it's often true in companies that you know, programmers are expensive. It's often much cheaper to pay for a solution that's already there, right? It's interesting. Like, I'm sort of getting off topic, but it's interesting how it relates to software, paying for software, because mm-hmm. A lot of people, most people, feel reluctant to pay for software because software is intangible, and to some extent, even I succumb to this strange train of thought. Like, because it feels like, well, it's free to make a copy of it, so like, why should I spend X amount of money to have this thing? I mean, is it really worth that much, right? But then it's interesting how much easier it is to make that decision when you don't do it just for yourself, but in the context of a business, because then like your mindset completely switches, and then you realize, yes, okay, an hour of my work is this much, and this cost this much, and it will save me, you know, sometimes just 30 minutes, and sometimes a couple of hours, and it's like, well, that's a no-brainer, right?
Exactly. I mean, this is all the time. This is a story of our life in Nozbe. We have to convince people that, you know, if you spend $10 on Nozbe a month, and it will save you 1 hour, you're already you've paid the software like several times. And if it saves you 5, 6, 10 hours a month or more, come on, the software is cheap. Right, but people don't think, oh, it's $10. I don't want to spend $10, right? So there's this mindset, and I see the switch already in many people's minds, but it's still a constant, you know, struggle to realize if this saves me so much time, then it's worth it, or if it gives me peace of mind, it's worth it. That's why I'm saying, mm-hmm. you know, the $10 for peace of mind. This is like for example, in my case, and. As you get as you have more income and you know your budget more, like you know your, as you said, you analyze your spending and budget, you can lift this thing, you know, from $10 to $20 and
yeah,
and
sure, it very much depends. It's always relative to your situation, right? Like everything we talk about sort of a template, but it will always depend on just what you can and can't do, and so mm-hmm. by extension it very much will depend on what kind of country you live in, right? Because you can do an equivalent sort of work in US and in Poland, and you'll make like a few times like a different amount of money, right? And also the cost of living is much cheaper, but then there's a big category of things that cost essentially the same everywhere. So like on some things, like it very much depends even like what country you live in, and that will change your decision making. But it's interesting to just have these mental models in mind to see what are the leverage points, where it's worth saving, where it's worth analyzing, improving your system, your habits, cutting down on unnecessary fixed costs, where to just change your mindset, like as you said, with a lot of young people, and where it's just a waste of time, and it's much better to invest that time elsewhere.
Yeah, and another practical thing, and I wanted to talk to you, is also, again, something that we can relate to in productivity, is the power of constraints. So mm-hmm. if you put constraint over yourself, like, it's, you know, all these stories when people are in debt, the first thing they do is they cut their credit cards so that they cannot spend the credit cards. They will have to use cash, because when you use cash, you, like, you know, it pains you to lose cash. Whereas quite the contrary, when I'm paying with my Apple Watch, with Apple Pay, it brings me joy. So it shouldn't bring me joy. I'm spending money, but it does bring me joy. I'm sorry about that. So the constraints. What I'm saying is that, you know, when you have constraints, you have to be creative. You have to, you know, figure out ways, because, you know, you're constrained. This applies to work. This applies to productivity. This also applies to finances. And by constraining yourself, what you can do is, like, monthly set some money aside. So when you have an income, you know, slip, you know, you have your, you know, your salary being paid to you or whatever, you have your income. And then you, it's X. But then when you put some money aside and you say, okay, I have to live with X minus this. And then you'll figure out a way to, you know, first you put just a little bit of money aside. Then you gradually, with every month, increase that size to the one that you're comfortable with, mm-hmm. and you will be surprised that you can still live with this money. Like, you don't need, you know, this is the easiest way to save money. Just put stuff aside, and is this famous quote, out of mind, out of sight, out of mind, right?
Yeah, there's totally true. It's so true in so many contexts in life, that just by the nature of us being humans, what you do will expand until it fills available resources. So mm-hmm. if the money you earn just appears on your bank and you live from month to month, then you'll spend all of that because it's available, right? If you hire more employees, they will do more work, more things. They will do them better or less efficiently until all of the work is expanded. If you feel like there's constantly a traffic jam and you build more lanes in the road, there will be more cars until there's a traffic jam again. Like it always works like this. So that's a really good brain hack to just force yourself to sort of by definition, by system, that some money you make so that it essentially doesn't exist for you, and then you'll figure out a way to live with what you have, and that's enough.
Yeah, especially, you know, as you said, if you analyze your spending, you can see, okay, I need that to live, and I need a bit of that to, you know, have fun and, you know, spend on fun stuff. But actually, that's all I need. So there is a margin I can, you know, put aside for the future. And for example, and then you have another power is the power of compounding. So once you start doing that regularly, the money just piles up, right? So we have this thing in my company that I've started years ago. I saw a presentation, I think, by Ken Robinson about teaching children. We'll put a link in the show notes. It's a TED Talk, and he was explaining how to teach children saving and teach children charity. And I was struck by this because I was like, "Yeah, but I don't do anything for charity regularly. I just, you know, sometimes I give somebody something or just, you know, pay, you know, for some cause, but not really much." So what I did was I created a numbers spreadsheet. Come 20th of each month, and I had to pay tax, income tax. So I would put the income tax there, and then I would put additional 3% of my profit that should go to charity, and 3 or 4, I don't remember, percent of profit goes for the school fund for my kids. So in the future, when my daughter decides to study on Harvard, I will be able to pay something. <You know>? I don't know how much, but something, you know. So I started doing that, and now, as you know, in our charity fund in Nozbe, we have so much money because I've been doing this month after month after month, and it was always fixed 3% of profit. That's it, and there was no negotiation. It was just automatically calculated. I would spend this money. I would wire this money to a different bank account. And it's there. So I emotionally, this money is gone for me. I've parted with this money. It's not my money anymore, right? It belongs to charity. So
not only do you sort of save in the sort of way you describe for yourself, but also you save a fixed percent for charity and for your kids' school.
Yes.
Every month.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And to explain what you said about having so much money for charity, what we have been doing for last couple of years in Nozbe is every half a year or so, you say, okay, everybody, you have this amount of money to spend on charity, philanthropy, whatever. Like pick a cost, like pick whatever you feel is right, and we'll wire the money. And actually, I, you know, inspired by this idea, I started doing this on my own. Like every half year or something, I calculate the 3% of my sort of profit, right?
Uh-huh.
And I put it aside for charity spending. And that's a fascinating hack in the sense that 3% is a small number in relative terms, but a pretty large number in absolute terms, right? As in,
exactly,
I would feel like I'm wasting precious resources if I put the absolute number that it comes down to, mm-hmm. and wired it to someone. Like it would feel unreasonable, but when you just put it in a magic spreadsheet so that it just 3% of the income, it's not a lot. Like, you know, it's not a lot. It's 3%, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you so earn that much, so it's just, and it's just 3%, so it's,
yeah, mm-hmm. and it scales. It's like tax on being a good citizen.
Yeah, it's an additional tax you put on yourself. Yeah. But the cool thing is, as I said, you know, every month, if you do it every month, the money just piles up, and the same goes with savings. So if you decide, you know, instead, so in the beginning, it's good to decide on a fixed amount. Like, for example, I'm going to save $50, or I'm going to save $20, or whatever every month. But in the future, or long term, it makes sense to again do a percentage, like percentage of my income goes to savings, and this way you won't you will also avoid the trap that if you earn more you're gonna spend more because still the same fixed percent goes out, right? So mm-hmm. even if you earn more, so more goes out, right? And this has always also worked for me, and that's why later you have. They call it a financial cushion. So you have like this financial, you know, buffer that if something goes wrong or you don't, you know, you need all of a sudden more money for something, for some emergency cause or whatever, or you want to invest, you want to buy a house, like maybe in the future you want to buy a home, right? Then mm-hmm. you have that, you know, or you know, it's there, it's in there, but it's piling up every month, and you have a good habit that it goes, and you have a constraint because you have less money at your disposal, so you won't be inclined to buying too many clothes.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe I should set aside a ridiculously small amount of money every month, and only from this magic account I can buy clothes and shoes. Maybe that's the hack I need. No, but we're running out of time, and there's a ton more insights that I would like to share. But I think one that I would add, since you've mentioned financial cushion, is a strategy prescribed by Michał Szafrański for saving money in like three important steps. So the first thing you need is this sort of base cushion, the emergency fund, as he calls it, which is like you should decide like how much money that is for you and for your country and whatever, but it's enough to cover you in case unexpected things pop up, right? Like throughout the year, like you don't know when something screws up, and I don't know, your car breaks down or something, and you have a lot of money to pay. And if you don't have savings, then that must be the first step, to have enough money set aside so that you don't touch on unless there's an emergency, to pay for that. And so you know, you build that. Anyway, you describe either like fixed amount each month or a percentage in each month, and you cap it at some level that you deem reasonable. And then once you have that, then the next step is to build up a irregular spending fund, as he calls it. So that's if you have bigger savings, then that's not necessary. But if you do a budget, then in addition to the monthly budget, you should have a spending fund where you have enough money to cover things that happen irregularly, not every month, but irregularly throughout the year, and you can predict that. And then the 12th of that amount you add every month, and then you spend from that account. But and after you have that, and that's sort of the basics, then building the cushion, the safety fund, is really key, and that should be enough to cover life expenses for 3 to 12 months, like whatever you deem reasonable.
Yeah.
And again, like he talked about it, like if you have a family, then you'll want, you know, enough to cover the life expenses maybe for your whole family. If you're sole provider, like it will depend on your situation, but having that specifically set aside, like distinguished from other savings that you have, is really it buys you peace of mind, and that's worth a lot, because you know you can be much more comfortable taking risks, right? Investing time in learning, trying new things that might not work out, because you know that even if things don't work out, if maybe a business idea that you want to start won't work out, or you lose your job or whatever, then you're set. You're set for enough time that you'll figure things out, right? And yeah. And so like building that is really worth the effort.
Yeah, as you said, it's between 3 to 12 months, which you should calculate. And for example, in my case, I did it also for my entire family. So if we would both, my wife and me, be jobless, had no money, no income coming in, we should be able to live, you know, at least 6 months or more from this money, to cover all of our expenses that we have now, and you know, figure out a way to start earning money in the meantime. And this money for me is untouchable, like Elliot Ness. I mean, I like, for example, when we're doing even major investments like buying a house, I wouldn't touch that money. I would have that money aside, especially when I was doing a big investment, because I wanted to make sure that. Have this, you know, that I'm not spending all of it, and then I'm just completely broke with a new house, right?
Yeah.
So I wasn't touching that money at all, and we are still keeping it. We're still keeping it, this cushion, and we're not, you know, this financial cushion, and then just, you know, not touching it.
It's a very simple idea, right? That it might be a lot of money to set aside, depending on your situation, but. But it's a very simple idea to set it aside, but like specifically, like separately from other things, and like mark it as untouchable, right? Because that's the whole point. Like it's not money to it's not the savings to dip into when you want to do something that needs money. Mm-hmm. It's the savings not to dip into, especially when you need money. Like unless you need it so bad, right? Mm-hmm. And that's also interesting in the. Another discussion that we won't have today, but hopefully we'll get back to about investment, right? That, mm-hmm. that when you have this structure set up sort of in your banks and in your mind, that there's the emergency fund and then there's the safety fund that will cover you if unexpected things pop up, then all the savings above that are sort of free to spend in a way. So you can decide, like, maybe this money, which might be a lot of money, that's the money that you save up for a new house or a car when you're not young and then you're bored with your life and you need a Porsche, right? Or maybe that's the money.
Nobody needs a Porsche.
Well, some people feel like they do. And you can feel much more comfortable risking financially the other savings in investment that, depending on the type, carries a different amount of risk, but then it's a much more conscious decision that you know you're risking it, but you also know you have enough money to keep you alive for a year, for example, right?
Yeah,
if everything else dries up.
All right, so to wrap it up, I want to just have one book recommendation. It's Profit First. It's a book recommendation for young entrepreneurs, or for entrepreneurs anyway, but for small and medium-sized entrepreneurs, so some people like us. And it also carries this kind of philosophy, like what we discussed today on this show, Profit First by Mike Mihalovic. So yes. So in our language, it would be Mikey Mike. So Mikey Mike wrote this book. It's a very good book. It, again, sound business advice, but then again, something not so obvious, and something that, you know, you should take under consideration. So enjoy reading. It was a good one, recommended by one of my fellow entrepreneurs, and he really loved it, and he realized that he was running a company in the wrong way, and thanks to this book, he changed the course.
Right. How does it feel being an internet expert on diet and money?
Wow.
And productivity.
There's just so much.
And triathlons. You know,
there's so much burden on our shoulders, you know, right now, that we are experts in all these fields. But we are students.
It's called The Podcast for a reason, right?
Exactly. Exactly. The Podcast. We know it all. No, we study it all. And then we discuss here.